That's such an evil laugh, right? I mean, you'd almost expect that, you know, well, Halloween is next Thursday. A lot of you are going to go to, like, haunted houses and mansions and whatever this weekend. You know, I got to do any of that stuff. I don't care.
I'd love to, but I feel like going to that solo is weird, and all of my friends are pansies.
Well, that's one way to look at it. That's one way to look at it. All right, so here's the answer before we get to the calls. Here's the answer, I think that is correct, to your question about why wasn't that reviewable because it was a scoring play, which on the surface, I think you're absolutely right, right, to question, wait, it's a scoring play. Why isn't it reviewable? Well, here's the problem. On reviewable scoring plays, it's only for whether or not the ball crossed over the plane of the goal line, whether it's inbounds or not inbounds, or whether it's a turnover or not, meaning, you know, a fumble or an interception or what have you.
I mean, given.
It's never like a holding penalty that was missed or a pass interference penalty that was missed or, in this case, a face mask.
I understand what you're saying, but because this was a safety, technically isn't this a turnover? Because it's a points, and then you have to kick it off to the opposite team. So that
I know what you're saying, but a safety
is... So wouldn't you be watching for, hey, what happened in that? Oh, there was... flagrant face mask.
I understand what you're saying, but a safety is not for whatever, even though it is technically, it's not considered a turnover.
And I think that this is the only reason that this is coming up is because of the fact that it is very easy to get a hold or something like that when you're in the end zone. And if that's missed, that's immediately a safety where it's very, it seems like as long as the judges miss it, it's kind of anything goes in the end zone. And as long as you don't get caught, if the other guy goes down, oh well.
Yeah, I mean, listen, now we should point out, right? The Vikings were down by 8.
Yeah.
And they had to drive 95 yards.
With a minute and a half.
And two-point conversion, and they had no timeouts left. So it was very unlikely that they were going to do, not impossible, but very unlikely. That ended the game, okay? So again, there's appropriate outrage. Jordan Schultz, who, you know, NFL insider, what have you, blamed it, said, this is not, you know, and I like Jordan, this is not fair to the players. This is not fair to the players and the coaches who work so hard. And he basically said, you know, the NFL officials stink. And he's right that they stink. He's right that it's not fair to them. But here's the bottom line. The league and the competition committee has screwed the pooch on this to no end. To no end. So, like, just look it up, right? Like some of the articles in the replay assist, officially known as the replay assistance rule, is a procedure that affords the league's officials opportunities to overturn, and here's the quote, the main part of the statement, obviously incorrect on-field calls. That's all you need to know. It doesn't matter where, it doesn't matter when, it doesn't matter what the score is, it doesn't matter whether it's a hold or a face mask or whatever. If something is obviously incorrect, which there's nobody that could say that that wasn't obviously incorrect, it should be allowed to be reviewed by replay assistance, and it was not. Again, the league... as a whole, has had an arrogance level to no end about stupid rules and what you can and what you cannot review for years and years and years. Do you remember the down by contact? Oh, we can't review it because it was ruled down by contact. Shut up!
And, like, to an extent, I understand not wanting to be have every single play completely under a microscope. Because that's going to destroy the rate of the game. You need to keep the game pace proper. Yeah, but in big-time moments
somebody
like
pointed
this
out to me. Somebody pointed this out to me on Twitter earlier today, and you're going there. I mean, you're not, like, I understand where you're coming from, so go say, in points like this...
there needs to be moments where, like, somebody... the people in New York, the guy in New York mm-hmm. that has the button that says mm-hmm. no, yes or no, has to be able to say, you got to throw a flag on that.
Again, if the language, and I don't know if this is just, this is from a story from the Sporting News. If the language in the league's official rules and bylaws, and I have not had time to check that out, is opportunities to overturn obviously incorrect on-field calls, then all you need to know is, no, every penalty, every situation that you don't like is not obvious. Like, fans think things are so obvious. Last night was obvious. A holding penalty on Andrew Wiley that takes away a touchdown is not always obvious.
Benjamin Saint Juice scarding is not always obvious.
Yes, that's a better example. Benjamin Saint Juice in Baltimore, good call. Especially the second one that angered a lot of fans. Not obvious. Not obvious.
Last night,
beyond obvious. And why the league and the competition committee can't figure this out, I have no idea. Again, it is similar to when they couldn't review down by contact. And then there was another, like, again, you want to talk about an obviously egregious call, and it benefited the Los Angeles Rams in the NFC Championship game in New Orleans, right? That defensive pass interference 6-7 years ago along the sideline. That's what's called obvious. Obvious. Obviously incorrect. We're not talking about every foul, every flag, every penalty, every situation. We're talking about obviously incorrect. Matt, I was at a game. I don't even remember the play. Because it was so kind of inconsequential, but it was like late in the third quarter of week one, Tampa and Washington, and they basically, the play was like a 30-some-odd yard, screen or run or whatever it was for Tampa, and they called it back or something happened, and then they said, well, we're going to replay assistance. There was no challenge. Todd Bowles did not challenge anything. Obviously, Dan Quinn did not challenge anything because it benefited him. And they went to replay assistance, and they said, nope, we made an error. The ball goes here, and it was like a 30-yard gain. I can get the exact play and whatever later on. It doesn't matter. The point being is some innocuous play at the end of the third quarter, early fourth quarter in Tampa, week one, that took away a 30-yard gain or reinstituted a 30-yard gain, that it can be used for, but last night it can't be, makes no sense at all in any way. This is the NFL's fault. This is the competition committee's fault. And I'm here to tell you, maybe they should try and stop drinking so many damn cocktails in cabanas at these posh resorts down in, Palm Beach Gardens or Orlando this or at wherever the hell they go for these league meetings. Maybe they should actually do some work. Maybe they should actually, get serious. And this is the competition committee. This is the owners. This is the NFL. Use common sense. Common sense. That's it. All right. Out to the phones we go. Let's go to Jeff in Gaithersburg. Get a new voice in here. What's up, Jeff? How are you?
What's up, buddy? How you doing?
What's going on, Jeff?
I want to thank you so much for being on the radio, you and Doc, and obviously and B. Mitch and JP and the whole and you guys make my week.
Oh.
You make it bearable, so I want to thank you for that.
Wow, that is really nice. I appreciate it.
I can't tell you how important it is for me to listen to you.
Before you get into your call, that is very, very, very kind, and I will pass that message along to those guys and appreciate you. And, obviously without you guys and, listeners and whatever, can't do it. But certain people, listen, the people that are nicer to us and appreciate us more and value us more are going to get treated kinder and better and whatever. So I appreciate, again, the sentiment, the thought, the nice words. I'm not lying. It's been a tough week. That just made my week.
My pleasure. My pleasure. So the first thing is I own a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu academy. And I've done martial arts for 30 years, and I've been doing BJJ for over 23 years.
Okay.
So one of the common injuries is called popping a rib. Basically, what happens is that you separate the cartilage. it's super uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened when Jaden was running down the field at 47-yard when he took off, he went to stiff arm, and then Jaden sat down. Then the back guy fell on top of his head, and he folded, and he did a flip, correct?
That's a pretty good description of it.
And
right.
That's how he – and it's like the rib cage, like it goes over the belly, and then it's very – and you pop the rib.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're looking at, hey, is it going to be a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks? It's a minimum of 10 to 12, 14 weeks to recover from this. But you
wait, can wait, wait, to recover 100 – to recover 100% is what you're saying?
I'm talking – minimum 3 to 4 months minimum.
But to get back to 100% or to be able to fight or operate or play in a football game.
Not even 100%.
Okay, gotcha.
You're looking at like 70-80%. It takes a while. It takes 6 months. It's a very uncomfortable thing. So as soon as he fell and he got up, he grabbed his lower belly. He grabbed his ribs.
Mm-hmm.
He put his hand on his ribs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's things you can do. Number one, obviously, there's no blood flow that goes to there. So it's really hard. So they have to they do a lot of ice, and it's a lot of heat. And then they'll most likely tape his ribs, which is normal, but he'll lose a little bit of mobility. He'll be uncomfortable. And then they're going to have to medicate him.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the reality. He's going to have to be on – I don't really know. I know what a COX-2 contributor is because I took Vioxx a long time ago when it was legal. It got outlawed in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
So I hurt my ribs in Brazil, and I got an injection. They gave me a bunch of samples, and you can play with the pain. It's unbelievable. You don't even feel it. You feel like you're 18 again.
But it doesn't mean you're healed. You can play with it.
No.
You won't feel probably anything, but it doesn't mean you're healed is your point.
Right. And it's true. And they're going to have to – they'll probably have him on Toradol now or whatever, and then they're going to have to shoot him up maybe with lidocaine so they numb it so he doesn't really feel – it feels like a spider butt. You feel it, and it's very uncomfortable. When you sleep, you feel it. When you go to tie your shoes, you feel it. Anytime you move. So a week's rest is really not – and anybody says, oh, give him one more week. They have no clue. It's no different than if you never experienced Mike Tyson punching you in the face, then you can't experience. And that's the kind of pain. It's a very awkward, uncomfortable feeling, and you feel like, oh, my God, what happened?
Right.
It's the weirdest feeling you ever felt. Like you feel like you're being stabbed.
Yeah.
And
well, let me ask you this, because I'm fascinated by your expertise on this, even though you're not a doctor or whatever. Yeah. Like, would you if somebody had a similar, very similar, substantially similar, however you want to say it, injury like this in what you do, jiu-jitsu, right? How long?
Yeah, Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Yeah.
Right. I didn't know. The exact difference, but how how long do you think that reasonable that they could take kicks or punches to that area? Do they have to be souped up on all sorts of drugs, or is there a way to kind of get around that or with tape or anything like that?
Number one, like jiu-jitsu is like the wrestling part. It's the grappling part of mixed martial arts, right?
Okay.
Like the Gracie family. So we're like not kicking and punching. Otherwise, you would be in deep water.
Okay.
But the reality is that usually when somebody pops the rib or let's say separate, they're calling it pop the rib. When they separate the cartilage, you're looking at like a guy won't come to the academy for like 6 weeks.
Wow. Okay.
And then after 6 to 7 weeks, he'll like, hey, can I rep? You know, he'll do the exercises. He'll do some moves, you know, like arm bars, whatever. But he won't, we call it rolling, the grappling part. When you shake hands into free sparring, he won't do that for 10, 12 weeks, 14, 16 weeks. Because he's got to feel it, especially when he's on the bottom. So if Jaden throws a ball and he's, His upper torso is exposed, like his arm is open from his body.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's going to be uncomfortable. Now, they're going to obviously numb him. They're going to do whatever. So if he doesn't play this week or he doesn't play next week, it's not going to make a difference because it's a several-week thing that you deal with.
Right. And the only way really around the only way really around it is, again, to numb it up or medicate it and then allow whatever time is there, which clearly they don't have, you know, 12, 13, 14 weeks. That can be done in mid-January or late January or, I guess, early February, but it cannot be done right now. Really good information. I'm glad you called, and thanks again for the nice words. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate you.
No, I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Have a good weekend. What a call that was. Jeff in Gaithersburg. Yeah, man. Little Ric Flair wooage. I don't know if Jeff's ever called. I don't recognize him or the voice, but really, really nice. It's always good to get compliments as opposed to criticism. But also made some really, really, really good points, right?
I mean, there are sports that have more frequent injuries, and that's one of those.
Right.
That has a more frequent rib injury, and because there is so much grappling with jiu-jitsu, that it makes sense that with the kind of correlation between that and football, how is it going to affect him when he's on the field?
Yeah, and again, we want to caution. He's not a doctor.
No.
We're not doctors. It's not exactly the same thing, but ultimately, I guess the bottom line is if it is that, and we've mentioned cartilage a couple of times, right? There's a reason why we've mentioned cartilage.
Yeah.
Okay. If you have that, and it, say, is to be fully healed, a 12-week timeline, 10 to 12 weeks, whatever. Again, clearly, they're not going to shut him down for 10 to 12 weeks, so they have to numb him up. They have to take care of him, the flak jacket, the protection, whatever that he's already got. And see if he can operate like that. The question is, you know, as Jeff pointed out, and as I mentioned earlier, what happens when you're not on whatever painkiller it is and you sneeze? You know, and you're a violent sneezer. You're not you're a violent sneezer. And I don't know what kind of sneezer Jaden Daniels is, but you get the point. Like, are you in immense pain? Are
yes.
you, you know? So
yes.
Something to keep in mind. All right, we got to take a timeout. We got to come back. What are we doing next? Oh, we're doing our dual Super Sunday six packs, six games against the NFL spread, including the Commanders, and as well, six teams ranked 1 through 6 in order of how well they're doing through 7 weeks of the NFL season. That's next on the Team 980 on the Odyssey app. By the way, did you see Shohei Ohtani throwing in the Dodgers bullpen yesterday? He's been ruled out of being a pitcher in the World Series. He was throwing gas. And as they said on MLB Network, I think last night, maybe early this morning, competitive advantage-wise, I guess it's kind of good to rule him out. Whew, man. Dave Roberts put him in a big spot to win the World Series or, you know, to lock up a game. That would be really interesting. Really interesting. Really interesting. All right. It is time for the most revolutionary, visionary, and creative segment in sports talk radio history. And that is six games against the NFL spread, including the Commanders and the Bears. We pick the Commanders game every week. And six teams ranked 1 through 6, top through 6. No committees, no honorable mentions, no BS. Let's do it. All right, here we go. The Washington Commanders pick will be coming up shortly. Ah, you thought I was going to give it to you then. You were wrong. First up, the Tennessee Titans. Ugh. They are not good offensively. I think we all know that, right? The Tennessee Titans stink offensively, and their defense is being asked to do way too much, and they're losing games, but I don't need them to lose. I need them to play tough. And I think they will play tough enough. Detroit's been rocking and rolling over everybody. Jared Goff's been over a 140 rating the last 3 weeks, all-time NFL record. The game's in Detroit. But something tells me Tennessee loses. But can you lose by 10? Because the number is plus 11. Give me Tennessee plus the 11. Game number two. The Miami Dolphins get Tua Tagovailoa back. Hopefully, he's healthy. Hopefully, there's no issues. Hopefully, you know, there's no problems. The Arizona Cardinals did beat the Chargers late on Monday night in a very physical game. But they have a short week and a long-ass road trip from Arizona to Miami. Give me the Dolphins minus the 4 over the Arizona Cardinals. Game number 3 in our Super Sunday six-pack. The Atlanta Falcons. God, dude, I trust them last week, and boy, did they throw up all over themselves. I have no idea why I'm trusting them again, with the exception of no Chris Godwin, no Mike Evans, Tampa on a short week. Their defense is a disaster. And Kirko's got to play a little bit better than he did last Sunday. Bijan Robinson's been a bigger part of the offense. Give me the Falcons. Minus 2.5 at Raymond James and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Game 4. The Green Bay Packers have been on a roll. Give me them on the road. Minus the 4 over the Jaguars. Another team, they won last week, but they had to come home from London. Well, London to Jacksonville is not forever, but it's still 5.5-6 hours. Long road trip. They're not that good. We know that. They're not that good. Okay, you beat the Patriots. Congratulations. Give me the Packers minus the 4 over the Jaguars. Game number 5. I rarely like to lay big spreads, right? Just logic, common sense, tell you really hard to win games by 11 points or more in the NFL. Well, while I didn't do it with the Titans and the Lions, and I think for good reason, I will do it with the Denver Broncos, minus 10.5 at home against Carolina. Carolina has ruled out Andy Dalton, so that means Bryce Young, no Adam Thielen, and no Deontay Johnson. And their defense is still decimated, and they're horrible in Denver and everything in between. If Denver doesn't cover the minus 10.5, I mean, that's as much of a slam dunk as you're going to get. I'm sure they'll lose the game outright. Pick number 6. The Chicago Bears and the Washington Commanders. 425 Northwest Stadium on Sunday afternoon. We still don't know, obviously, as we've talked about all afternoon about Jaden Daniels. But even if Jaden plays, we don't know how effective he's going to be. We don't know if he's going to get injured. We don't know anything. This was going to be a really, 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 really tough game to play. The Bears with Montez Sweat. And the E&E boys at linebacker, Edmonds and Edwards, and Jalen Johnson on the back end. And even though they're banged up elsewhere in the secondary, and with all of their weapons on offense, Roma Dunze, the receiver that kicked their ass last year that went to Maryland. Oh my gosh, DJ Moore, huh? And Caleb Williams and their running back game, which is versatile. Even though their offensive line is a little helter-skelter still, and even though Caleb can turn the ball over, unfortunately, guys, and I'm rooting for me to be wrong, I'm okay with me being wrong, I've got to go with the Bears minus the 3 over the Washington Commanders. So give me the Titans plus 11 in Detroit. Miami minus 4 over Arizona at home. Atlanta minus 2.5 in Tampa over the Bucs. Packers minus 4 over the Jaguars in Jacksonville. Denver minus 10.5 at home against Carolina. And the Bears minus the 3 here in Landover against Washington. And real quickly, running through my top 6 picks, 6 teams rather, 1 through 6. Again, no BS honorable mention like some people do. No committees like some people do. I don't have money to make a committee. I don't know where these people come up with their resources, but I don't have it. Maddie, do you have 2 nickels to rub together for a committee?
I have a single dime that I use to pick the...
to pick games.
Yeah.
And the coin often outbit picks a lot of other people, right?
Well, I guarantee you it's going to outpick someone this week because they never turn their picks in.
I wonder who you could be talking about. I wonder who you could be talking about. We'll find out next week. The 6 teams in a row in the NFL. The Chiefs, number 1, of course. Only undefeated team. The Ravens, number 2. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. The Detroit Lions, number 3. The Green Bay Packers, number 4. The Pittsburgh Steelers, number 5. And did the Washington Commanders get back into the top six after slipping out last week after the loss against Baltimore? The answer is no. The Houston Texans are number six. So in order, the Chiefs, Ravens, Lions, Packers, Steelers, Texans, 1 through 6. I don't love the Texans. I think they're eking by in a bunch of games, but I like them slightly more than I like the Washington Commanders, who would be in my honorable mention if we had a stupid honorable mention. Time for a trending alert right here, right now on the Team 980, and then clean up on aisle three. All right, so you have the injury reports and news from Command Land in Ashburn. Jaden Daniels wants to play, doesn't know if he'll be allowed to play. Says the decision is not his. Dan Quinn said he went through a practice and an elevated practice today, and that they worked him hard, and they were pleased with what they essentially saw. Of course, video review, they'll take it up presumably until, they said, 48 hours, Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon. Our game day coverage is all day here on the Team 980 and finishes with Doc Walker hosting the post-game show on your way out of Northwest Stadium right around 7:30 on Sunday night. So make sure you tune in for that. The Vikings suffering a big blow, not only the loss last night in Los Angeles, their second loss in 5 days, and as well, they slipped out of the top six for whatever that's worth. They've lost their starting left tackle, stud-like Christian Darrisaw, for the rest of the season with a left knee injury. And according to a report just out, the Lakers and Bronny James are going to split Bronny James' time with the Lakers NBA team and the Lakers G League team after an upcoming road trip. And that's what's trending. All right, on a feel-good football Friday, we wrap things up. Down the stretch, we come to the weekend, baby. Let's fire up the intro for cleanup on aisle three. Some of the things we have not been able to get to right here, right now on the Team 980. I hope Matt's okay with it. Because I didn't really ask. What we may have missed. What we forgot. What we need to touch on. What we promoted that we didn't get to. And even if it's just a minute or two, a mention.
Clean up in aisle three.
Clean up on aisle three. All right, indeed. And we'll start with game one of the World Series. First of all, the late, great Fernando Valenzuela will be remembered as he's being remembered next to his number 34 at Dodger Stadium. They have a bouquet of flowers and whatnot. To honor, again, the late tremendous left-hander who took the world by storm in 1981 and beyond, passed away the other night, as we mentioned on Wednesday's show, I believe it was. And also, the Dodgers are going to be wearing patches on their uniforms to remember the former 1981 Cy Young Award winner and Rookie of the Year. Fernando Mania will be very much a part of the World Series, and it's kind of ironic, I'm sure I'm not the only one to point this out, that the Dodgers beat the Yankees in the World Series in that year, 1981. They have not faced each other since then in the Fall Classic. So here we are, 44 years later, 43 years later, whatever it was, whatever it is, and they're taking on each other, and Fernando Valenzuela just having passed away will certainly be on the minds, the hearts of the Dodgers. Now, the Dodgers are going to be a little bit more pressed. Remember, during the NLCS and other rounds against the Padres, how the big storyline is they're starting pitching, right? And how little of it they have. Tonight, they're starting Jack Flaherty. They've won a lot of games, largely by their bullpen. But now, they announced this morning that Evan Phillips, one of their better relievers, is not going to be on the World Series roster. He suffered an arm injury during Game 6 of the NLCS And that is a big-time blow. 6 2/3 innings in 5 postseason appearances, a 3.62 ERA with 18 saves and 61 appearances during the regular season. Listen, is he lights out? Of course not. But is he a big part of that bullpen? Yes. And the Dodgers are now going to have to mix and match not only their starting rotation. Be interesting to see if they have a bullpen game start here along the way, or what they do. Of course, if Jack Flaherty or whoever gets lit up early, how they kind of manage that. And it's all the reasons why, as I sit here, even though the Dodgers have home field advantage, I think the New York Yankees are going to win the World Series. And that means Juan Soto would be once again top of the baseball world, as he was in 2019 with your Washington Nationals. It also means Giancarlo Stanton, who's been a monster, and Aaron Judge would be world champions. Gerrit Cole, Aaron Boone, the Steinbrenner family back in the baseball penthouse. I think the Yankees probably win this series in 7, I'll say. In 7. Maddie, you got to lean one way or the other, or you don't care?
Don't really care so much. It's the two best teams, and they're also the two most expensive teams.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be good baseball, but I'm in it for baseball. I don't have any really driving factors. I'd like to see Shohei, like, prove that he is kind of the most electric baseball player.
And that's the thing. I wonder, like, Dave Roberts ruled out Shohei as a pitcher. I wonder now, combined with their need and combined with Phillips, and I'm guessing he knew Phillips was, you know, not going to be or was question. If Shohei gets on the mound, if Shohei, you know, hits a couple of bombs in the series, it's going to make the X explode. If he gets on the mound and say it's in a huge leverage spot, oh, man. Oh, baby. Again, I don't know medically where he's at, but he was throwing gas in some of the overhead camera shots that I saw on MLB Network. Oh, he was throwing gas. So anyway, that is Game 1 of the World Series tonight, 8:08. Game 2 tomorrow night, 8:08. Day off Sunday, Game 3, 4, and 5, Monday through Wednesday at Yankee Stadium. All right, one story that we haven't gotten to, I think we mentioned it very briefly in one of the trending alerts early on in the show, but in case you weren't with us, the Jets are back in action this Sunday at 2-4. Things not going their way, blown out in Pittsburgh to Russell Wilson, a guy that nobody thought would be a good enough starter except for this show. And Hassan Reddick signed with the Jets on Monday, agreed to a contract last Sunday, reported to the Jets finally this Monday, and is going to play for the Jets, Jets, this Sunday against the New England Patriots at Gillette Stadium. Jeff Ulbrich, the interim coach, said he's had a good week, experienced guy, wasn't difficult for him to pick up. He put in extra time, blah, blah, blah. The Jets are not 2-4, they're 2-5. Excuse me. Losers of 4 straight, again, blown out last Sunday, but now in consecutive weeks, they've added Davante Adams and Hassan Reddick to the fold. You got to think, at some point, that's going to help them win a game, right? At some point. And I know Drake May has played really well, pretty well, in his 2 games for the Patriots. He's kind of doing it by himself. Defense is horrible, which I thought would be a kind of a strength of New England. Look for the Jets. I didn't pick them because I didn't like the number. I think it's 7, 7.5. Look for the Jets to win this game. I'd be shocked. I'd be shocked, especially when Gerard Mayo called his team soft. Remember that last Sunday in London? So there you have that. All right, one last thing for you. The Capitals are off tonight, but they will go for win number 6 in a row. That's right. Win number 6 in a row for the Capitals. That'll have to wait until Saturday night. But the bottom line is the Capitals getting a couple of goals from Connor McMichael on Wednesday night, beating the Philadelphia Flyers in back-to-back nights. They will visit the Tampa Bay Lightning tomorrow night at Amalie Arena in Tampa. Listen, Tampa's really good. They've already got a couple of hat tricks. You know how good Victor Nikita Kucherov is, Victor Hedman. They don't have Stamkos anymore. Tough place to win. Good luck to the Caps. You can hear it on 106.7 The Fan tomorrow night. And the Odyssey app and Caps Radio at 7 o'clock from Tampa. We'll be rooting for them. They've won five in a row. Can they make it a perfect half dozen? We will find out together. They're on their way to Tampa right here and right now. All right, that does it for cleanup on aisle three right here.
Cleanup in aisle three.
Indeed. Sorry, my throat was not letting me finish that segment without turning off the old microphone and getting something out of my throat. Apologize for that. So that's where we'll leave the content, the sports content portion of the show. Sorry to everybody we didn't get to on the phones, just, you know, with all of our pre-filled in segments and whatnot. We just had a lot to get to. Obviously, we'll be here Monday and every day next week, scheduled. And have plenty of reaction to the Bears and the Washington Commanders. All right, coming up, Dumb Dumb of the Day. We're going to actually do something that I don't know if we've ever done. We're going to do a dual Dumb Dumb of the Day. How about that? How do you like them apples? Or that feta cheese? Next on the Team 980. Yeah, it would help if I turn on my microphone. Yes, indeed, it was a good day, or at least it has been so far. Hopefully nothing wrong after that. Thinking about a good friend of mine. I don't want to say his name on the air, just in case he doesn't want that. But, you know, going through some health issues and a little surgery, more than a little surgery today. So just thinking about him just want to put that out there and, you know, for everybody that's going through something, and there's other situations that I'm not at liberty to tell, but thinking about them and their family, and it's just people that we know and people that we care about and people that are important to us on this show. All right, it is time now for, I think, what is a first in the long sordid history of Dumb Dumb of the Day, that we have multiple stories for Dumb Dumb of the Day.
It's time for Dumb Dumb of the Day.
But one central theme, and that's Greek. That's why I kind of use the feta cheese as a kind of hint-a-rooney. A man in Greece, yes, a man in Greece, has been put on probation for sneaking into neighbors' homes. Not to steal anything. Nope. To smell their shoes.
I like toes.
Rex, calm down. Just worry about the NFL.
I like toes.
Rex, chill, baby.
I like toes.
A man in Greece was given a suspended 1 month prison sentence for, yes, sneaking into his neighbor's homes at night and smelling their shoes. He's 28 years old. He said he couldn't explain his foot fetish. But in essence, he was put on probation and ordered to seek therapy.
Don't be a donk.
He did. He went on to explain that the unusual act did cause him plenty of embarrassment, and it was not his intention to harm anyone or break the law. He just needed the scent,
sure,
of feet and shoes. So he was arrested in a town about 9 miles west of northern Greece earlier this month. A neighbor who had left the family shoes outside the house so that they could air out found the man sniffing them. But that wasn't the first time he had been caught in the act. In the last 6 months, three similar incidents had occurred, even though neighbors had asked the man's family to intervene and to get him to stop sniffing the footwear.
Boy, don't I look like an ass right now.
Well, pretty much, yes. Yes, you do. The second part of our Greece double dip is this: a TikToker. Yay! A TikToker was arrested recently after wrecking Greek flags at a New Jersey restaurant. Why? Because she thought They were Israeli flags.
That feels like a very Jersey thing to happen.
She's actually very attractive. Amber Matthews, 23 years old, has been charged with bias and intimidation for ripping down Greek flags attached to the awning of Effie's Gyro restaurant in Montclair, New Jersey. Actually, it was earlier. The incident was earlier this year, but she was just arrested. According to the Montclair, New Jersey Police Department, she has a code name on TikTok. She has posted video of her hateful rage on TikTok earlier this month, 7 months after. It's generated nearly $4.5 million million views on TikTok and millions more on the X. She's an anti-Israel, whatever that means, TikToker. She wears a she tore down the flags. She videotaped it, and again, she thought they were flags of Israel or representing Israel. Instead, they were flags of Greece. I don't know how to explain how dumb people are, but if you're on TikTok and you're showing videos of you causing damage to anything or anyone, that should pretty much tell you how much of a stupid idiot you are. But then on top of that, to think that flags of Greece are flags of Israel, when supposedly your thing is to be an anti-Israel person, combatant. Like, can you please study a little bit more? Can you please do a little more research there, honey?
Congratulations, you're Chris's dum-dum of the day.
Dual dum-dums of the day. How about that, huh? I don't know if I would know the difference between a Greece flag and an Israel flag, but I'm not anti anything. I just go and eat. I just want the gyro. That's it. That's all I really want. Here's what I want. The weekend, baby. We made it. Hopefully, it will be a decent one, if not a good one. Craig Hoffman is coming up next. He will take you home on this Friday afternoon. Great job out of Matty Ice all week long. And as well, you guys on the phones. Thanks to Lawrence Holmes from The Score in Chicago for joining us. Have yourselves a great weekend. See you at Northwest Stadium on Sunday for the Commanders and the Bears, and back here together again Monday afternoon at 1. Adios.